Book My Show Jukebox presents the Control Alt Win podcast. Hello, people. Let's talk about what everyone hates doing, but invariably ends up doing, which is worrying. If worry could solve even 1% of the problems that we face daily, worrying may be perfectly justified as a gainful global pastime. Because almost everyone worries. And they worry all the time. Yet, there is no evidence to suggest that worrying has been productive at all. In my life, I am yet to meet anyone who can tell me that worrying helped them solve a problem. On the other hand, I have learned from experience that worrying causes frustration and plunges you into a depressive spiral. By the end of a destructive spell of worrying, you're dealing with more crisis than you had originally started off with. You see, worrying comes free, so everyone indulges in it. But remember, the problems it seeds are very, very, very expensive. A business acquaintance, by sheer accident, introduced me to this unputdownable learning. Several years ago, I was in Bangalore on work, and I was running late for a meeting. The one I had just finished had ended badly. The client whom I had met owed my firm a substantial sum of money. We had been following up on our claim for over a year now. We had been promised a resolution and payment at that meeting. But the client went back on their word. They disputed our claim and refused to make any payment that day. The meeting ended sourly and in a stalemate. I was both angry and worried as I rode in the car for the next meeting. I was angry because what the client had done was unfair and unethical. I was worried because I had issued checks to parties who were long overdue for payment by us in anticipation of this inflow. I seriously did not know what I should do. In some time, I reached the venue of the next meeting. It was a large company, and they were prospecting my firm for a potential service contract. I was already late. So I tried to rush the security guard at the registration desk. He didn't seem to bother. I had to yell at him to usher me in. When I finally reached the reception area, I found the receptionist speaking on the phone. It appeared to me in a couple of minutes that she was on a personal call. I gestured to her, saying I was late for this meeting. She impatiently gestured back, asking me to be seated. I scowled, and I was very animated. I could literally hear the chatter in my head. It went like this: "Damn, why is everyone after me today? How am I supposed to pay off those vendors and meet the wage bill of my team with this inflow not coming through? And now, look at this, I am late for this meeting. Damn." Finally, after what seemed like an endless wait, I was led into an empty conference room. I hooked up my laptop and tested my presentation on the screen. A manager in a suit walked in. I did not look up at him. I was in no mood for any polite conversation. I just wanted my presentation to get over, and perhaps I just wanted to go back to worrying. To me, at that moment, dousing the fire in my cash flow was a far more urgent thing to do than sit down and discuss a potential business deal. Through the corner of my eye, I noticed that the man was keenly observing me. It appeared to me that he was one of the members of the leadership team to whom I was to present that day. After setting up my slide deck, I continued to look away from the man. It didn't occur to me at all that I was behaving like an oaf. I paced up and down the side of the conference room that I had occupied. The manager must have found it very bizarre that his guest was not even acknowledging his presence in his own office. My behavior must have been so weird that day. After what seemed like several moments of silent gazing by the man and a pretentious meditative pacing by me, he finally spoke up. He asked me in a cold, matter-of-fact tone. He said, "Avis, do you always look so beaten and morose? Do you always wear this frown all the time?" I froze in my tracks when I heard him. It felt like a bolt of lightning had fallen on me. I turned around and I looked at the man and sheepishly said, Well, I'm sorry, I was preoccupied." The man must have been in his mid-40s then, and I was in my mid-30s. He appeared to be a nice bloke. He smiled and spoke calmly. He said, "Avis, I can see that you're worried and you're angry about something. If you make this presentation feeling this way, let me tell you, my friend, you will piss everyone off. I'm already wondering, why the hell am I here?" I quickly apologized to him and also thanked him for being so candid. I walked across to his side and we exchanged business cards. I discovered that he was the head of strategy for the company and that he would have a big say in awarding my firm the mandate should we make the cut. I knew his CEO well and that's why I was there. But I realized I had to behave better. I pulled myself from the brink that day, thanks to the gentleman's timely intervention. The presentation went very, very well and we bagged the contract. But more than that, the value of the wisdom this man has imparted in me is priceless. He taught me in a nanosecond how worrying can ruin the present moment, where innumerable opportunities and possibilities coexist. He taught me the power of now. However, it took me several years of struggle, pain, and suffering to internalize this learning fully. But if he had not sowed that seed that day, I would not have been eventually able to tame the worry beast in my life. My daily practice of silence periods, which is Mauna, has helped me immensely here. You see, the human mind thinks up 60,000 thoughts a day. That's what research has proven. 60,000 thoughts a day. Most of these thoughts are random and are often unproductive, debilitating thoughts like fear, anxiety, guilt, grief, insecurity, and worry. Worrying consumes your thought bandwidth in your mind like nothing else does. It pins you down and holds you hostage. So because you can't banish thought, you can't get rid of worry. Just as waves endlessly, ceaselessly arise in an ocean, worries will arise in your mind. But just as you have an option to stay away from the waves when they crash on the shore, you also have the option to not pick up a worry. When a worry arises, watch it closely. It will arise and soon ebb away. When you don't pick up a worry, it is powerless. It is only when you attend to your worry that you become enslaved by it. So, while you can't have a worryless state ever, you can always learn the art of non-worrying. This requires training your mind and employing your 60,000 thoughts meaningfully than wasting them over worrying. I've learned that there are only two kinds of problems in life. One kind is of problems that you can solve. So when you can solve a problem, why worry about it? Let's say, for example, you have a headache. You can have a pill, or you can have some coffee, or you can go out for a walk, or you can just sleep it away. Here's a problem you can solve. So why worry about it? Please pardon the starkness of this example, friends. But let's say you have a headache that's caused by a malignant tumor. And your doctors say your chances are nil. Now, here's a problem you can't solve. So again, think about it. Why do you want to worry about it? Problems that belong to the second category may eventually be solved over time and will in some cases sort themselves out. But clearly, they can't be solved by you. So, why worry about such problems? When you examine life with such clarity, you will realize that worrying serves no purpose. It is completely futile and it is debilitating. Being non-worrying, however, is not being irresponsible. Let's get this straight. When you're non-worrying, you're not being irresponsible. It is not as if you are resigning to your fate. In fact, when you're non-worrying, you will be a lot happier. And when you're happier, you perform better at whatever you're doing. So, being non-worrying, in fact, is an intelligent and a very wise choice. If you think about it, all our worries are of a future that has not yet arrived. We imagine worst-case scenarios that in many cases don't really happen. Yet, we endlessly worry in anticipation of them. The very nature of a worry is of something unreal. It is always over something that hasn't happened yet. Now, if worry did not take you away from the reality of the present moment, from the now, it is fine. But worrying means not being present here, in the now. And if you look at it, life is only happening in the now. Which is why worrying is futile. It drains you of your focus and pushes you down a spiral of fear and insecurity. You end up postponing happiness whenever you worry. Instead, why not postpone worrying? I have tried it and I know it works. Whatever is causing you to worry just now, postpone the worrying by immersing yourself in the present moment, by engaging in the now. And then you see how happy you are. And if you reflect back on all that you worried yourself stiff about, they will have sorted themselves out over time, with you having had to do nothing about them. So my friends, why worry? Why postpone happiness? Postpone worrying instead. The Control-Alt-Win podcast is produced by Audioboom in association with Avis Vishwanathan.